I came the fast way. He didn't explain what that was, but continued. I see you have your van. There should be plenty of room for the four of us.
Z staying here, I said.
Stefan smiled.
To bring in the troops.
Do you know where the people who attacked Adam are? I asked, rather than commenting on Stefan's observation. He shook his head regretfully.
The mistress didn't see fit to tell me any more than I conveyed to you.
His face grew still for a moment.
I'm not even certain what she told me was truth. She may know nothing. You might want to find an excuse for not going, Mercy.
These visitors have already killed one man and made a mess of Adam's house, I told him. If your mistress knows where they are, we need to go ask. He gave me an oddly formal bow and turned to look at Samuel, giving him a wide smile that managed to keep from displaying his fangs.
I don't know you. You must be the new wolf in town.
I made introductions, but it was obvious that Samuel and Stefan were not going to be instant friends, and it wasn't Stefan's fault. I was a little surprised. Both men shared the easygoing charm that usually had other people smiling, but Samuel's manner was unusually grim. Obviously, he didn't like vampires. I hopped in my van and waited while Stefan and Samuel had a very polite argument about where they would sit. Both of them wanted the back seat. I was willing to believe that Stefan was trying to be considerate, but Samuel didn't want the vampire sitting behind him. Before he dropped his politeness and told Stefan so, I broke in. I need Stefan in front so he can tell me where we're going. Z knocked on my window, and when I turned on the power to roll it down, he gave me the dagger he'd pulled when Stefan first emerged from the shadows, along with a handful of leather that looked to be a sheath and belt.
Take this, he said. The belt ties so you can adjust it to fit you.
May I? Stefan asked diffidently as he settled himself in the front seat.
When Z gave a curt nod, I handed it over. The vampire held the blade up and turned it back and forth under the van's dome light. He started to hand it back to me, but Samuel reached between the seats and took it from him. He tested the sharpness of the edge, pricking himself lightly on the thumb. Sucking in his breath, he jerked his hand away and put his thumb in his mouth. For a moment, nothing happened. Then power washed through the van, not like the power the Alphas could call, nor did it feel like the magic Elizaveta Arkadyevna used. It was akin, somehow, to the fey power of glamour, and tasted like metal and blood in my mouth. After a bare moment, the night was quiet again.
I would suggest that feeding old blades your blood is not a good idea, said Stefan mildly.
Z laughed, a full-throated, open-mouthed sound that made him throw his head back.
Listen to the vampire, Samuel Brand's son. My daughter likes the taste of you a little too well.
Samuel handed the dagger and its accoutrements back to me.
Z, he said.
Then, as if he just realized something, he continued in German.
Siebold Adelbertkrieger aus dem Schwarzenwald. Siebold Adelbertschmeiter from the Walla Walla Fey Preserve, Z said mildly.
Siebold Adelbert's Smiter from the Black Forest, I translated, using my required 2 years of a foreign language course for the first time ever. It didn't matter. In German or in English, the words, which Sam made sound like a title of honor, still meant nothing to me. Go to any Irish village and they'll tell you the names of the Fae who interacted with their ancestors. There are rocks and ponds that bear the names of the brownies or kelpies that live there. The German stories tend to concentrate on the heroes. Only a few of the German Fae, like Lorelei and Rumpelstiltskin, have stories that tell you their names and give you fair warning about the Fae you might be dealing with. Samuel, though, knew something about Z. Z saw the look in my eye and laughed again.
Don't you start, girl. We live in the present and let the past take care of itself.
I have a degree in history, which is one of the reasons I'm an auto mechanic. Most of the time, I satisfy my craving for the past by reading historical novels and romances. I'd tried to get Z to tell me stories before, but like the werewolves, he would not say much. The past holds too many shadows. But, armed with a name, I was going to hit the internet as soon as I finally got to go home.
Z looked at Stefan, and the laughter faded from his eyes.
The dagger probably won't help a great deal against vampires, but I'll feel better if she has something to defend herself.
Stefan nodded.
It will be allowed.
The dagger lay on my lap, just like any other blade, but I remember the caress of power and slid it carefully into its sheath.
Don't look them in the eyes, Z told me abruptly. That means you too, Dr. Kornick.
Don't play dominance games with vampires, said Samuel. I remember.
The second half of that old wolf aphorism is, just kill them. I was happy he'd left it out.
Do you have any other warnings, vampire who is Mercy's friend? Z asked Stefan.
He shrugged.
I wouldn't have agreed to this if I truly thought the mistress had a harm in mind. Mostly, she just grows bored. Mercy is very good at soft answers that don't promise anything. If the wolf can manage the same, we should all be safe in our beds before dawn.
Chapter 10 I don't know where I expected the vampires to live. I suppose I'd been influenced by all those late-night flicks and imagined a large Victorian mansion in a disreputable part of town. There are a few along the downtown area in Kennewick, most of them polished and painted like old opera stars. And while there are a few run-down neighborhoods around, they tend to be populated with houses too small to house even a small seethe. It shouldn't have surprised me to be driving along a street with Mercedes, Porsches, and BMWs in every elegant cobbled driveway. The road had been cut into the side of a hill that overlooked the town, and for 30 years, doctors, lawyers, and CEOs had been building their 4,000-square-foot homes on the steeply sloped lots. But, as Stefan told us, the vampires had been there first. At the end of the main street, a smaller gravel road broke off and cut between a pair of 2-story brick edifices. It looked almost like it might be a driveway, but continued past the houses and into the undeveloped area behind them. We drove through about a quarter mile of the usual eastern Washington scrub, cheatgrass, sagebrush, and tackweed mostly, and then up over a small ridge that was just large enough to hide a 2-story sprawling hacienda surrounded by an 8-foot wall. As the road came down the hill, our view of the house was limited to what we could see through the double wrought iron gates. I thought the sweeping Spanish arches that graced the sides of the building did a wonderful job of disguising the scarcity of windows. At Stefan's direction, I parked just outside the walls where the ground had been leveled. The vampire jumped out and was around to open my door before Samuel got out of the van. "Should I leave this?" I asked Stefan, holding up Z's dagger. On the way, I decided that since it was too big to be hidden without fey glamour, which I don't have, it might be a good thing not to take it in at all. Stefan shrugged, his hands patting lightly on his thighs as if he heard music I didn't. It was a habitual thing with him. He was seldom absolutely still.
"Carrying an artifact this old could make them respect you more," said Samuel, who'd come around the van. "Wear it."
"I was worried about setting the wrong tone," I explained.
"I don't expect things to get violent tonight," said Stefan. "The dagger is not going to start anything."
He grinned at me.
"It is illegal in this estate, though. You'll have to remember to take it off when you leave."
So I wrapped the leather belt around my hips a few times. There was a handmade buckle without a pin on one end, and I wove the other end of the belt through and tied it off.
"It's too loose," said Stefan, reaching for it. But Samuel got there first.
"Tighten it around your waist," he said, adjusting it for me. "Then pull it over your hips so the weight of the blade doesn't slide the whole thing down around your ankles."
When he was satisfied, he stepped away.
"I'm not the enemy," Stefan told him mildly.
"We know that," I said. Stefan patted my shoulder, but continued.
"I am not your enemy, Wolf. I've risked more than you know by taking both of you under my protection. The mistress wanted to send others for you, and I don't think you'd have enjoyed that."
"Why take the risk?" Samuel asked. "Why take us under your protection? I know something of what that means. You don't know me, and Mercy is just your mechanic."
Stefan laughed, his hand still on my shoulder.
"Mercy is my friend, Dr. Kornick. My mother taught me to take care of my friends. Didn't yours?
He was lying. I don't know how I was so certain of it, but I was. Some werewolves can tell if a person is lying. I can only do it if it is someone I know really well and I'm paying attention. It has to do with the change in the normal sounds a person makes, breathing and pulse, things like that. Usually, I'm not paying that much attention. I've never been able to tell a thing about Stefan, not even the usual emotions that carry such distinctive smells. And Stefan's pulse and breathing tended to be erratic. I sometimes thought he only breathed because he knew how uncomfortable he made people when he didn't. Nonetheless, I knew he had lied.
You just lied to us, I told him. Why are you helping us?
I pulled out from under his hand so I could turn and face him, putting Samuel at my back.
We don't have a time for this, Stefan said, and some of the usual liveliness faded from his face.
I need to know if we can trust you, I told him, or at least how far we can trust you. He made one of those grand stage magician gestures, throwing his hands up and tossing his head, but I felt a fine cloak of real magic settling around us. Like Z, it tasted of earth, but there were darker things in Stefan's spell than anything the gremlin had done around me.
Fine, he said. Just don't blame me when she's in a rotten mood because we kept her waiting. You called me tonight with a question. What did you just do? Asked Samuel quietly.
Stefan let fall an exasperated sigh.
I made certain the three of us are the only ones participating in this conversation, because there are things that hear very well in the night.
He turned his attention back to me.
When I called our accountant, she put me right through to our mistress, which is not standard procedure. Our mistress was obviously more interested in your Dr. Kornick than she was with your question. She came to me and had me call you back. She didn't intend me to escort you. She didn't want you to have even that much protection. But once I offered, she could not contradict me. I am here, Mercy, because I want to know what is going on that stirs my mistress from the lethargy that has been her usual state since she was exiled here. I need to know if it is a good thing, or something very bad for me and my kind.
I nodded. All right.
But I would have done it for friendship's sake, he added.
Unexpectedly, Samuel laughed a little bitterly.
Of course, we all do things for our mercy for friendship's sake, he said.
Stefan didn't take us through the front gates, which were large enough to drive a semi through, but led the way around the side to a small open door in the wall. In contrast to the undeveloped scrub outside the gates, the interior grounds were elaborate. Even in November, the grass under the moon's waxing light was dark and luxurious. A few roses peeked out from protected areas near the house, and the last of the mums still had a few blooms. It was a formal French-style garden with organized beds and meticulous grooming. Had the house been a Victorian or Tudor-style home, it would have looked lovely. Next to a Spanish-style adobe house, it just looked odd. Grapevines, bare in their winter guise, lined the wall. In the moonlight, they looked like a row of dead men, hanging arms spread wide and crucified on the frames that supported them. I shivered and moved closer to Samuel's warmth. He gave me an odd look, doubtless scenting my unease, but set his hand on my shoulder and pulled me closer. We followed a cobbled path past a swimming pool, covered for the winter, around the corner of the house to a broad swath of lawn. Across the lawn there was a two-story guest house, almost a third the size of the main house. It was to this smaller building that Stefan led us. He knocked twice at the door, then opened and waved us into an entry hall decorated aggressively in the colors and textures of the American Southwest, complete with clay pots and kachina dolls. But even the decor was overwhelmed by the smell of mostly unfamiliar flowers and herbs rather than the scents of the desert. I sneezed, and Samuel wrinkled his nose. Perhaps all the potpourri was designed to confuse our noses, but it was only strong, not caustic. I didn't enjoy it, but it didn't stop me from smelling old leather and rotting fabrics.
I took a quick, unobtrusive look around, but I couldn't see anything to account for the smell of rot. Everything looked new.
"We'll wait for her in the sitting room," Stefan said, leading the way through the soaring ceilings of a living room and into a hall.
The room he took us to was half again the size of the biggest room in my trailer. From what I'd seen of the house, though, it was cozy. We'd left behind the Southwest theme for the most part, though the colors were still warm earth tones. The seats were comfortable, if you like soft, fluffy furniture. Stefan settled into a chair with every sign of relaxation as the furniture swallowed him. I scooted toward the front edge of the love seat, which was marginally firmer, but the cushions would still slow me down a little if I had to move quickly. Samuel sat in a chair that matched Stefan's, but rose to his feet as soon as he started to sink. He stalked behind my love seat and looked out of the large window that dominated the room. It was the first window I'd seen in the house. Moonlight streamed in, sending loving beams over his face. He closed his eyes and basked in it, and I could tell it was calling to him, even though the moon was not full. She didn't speak to me, but Samuel had once described her song to me in the words of a poet. The expression of bliss on his face while he listened to her music made him beautiful. I wasn't the only one who thought so.
"Oh, aren't you lovely?"
said a voice, a throaty, lightly European voice that preceded a woman dressed in a high-cut, semi-formal dress of gold silk that looked rather odd combined with jogging shoes and calf-high athletic socks. Her reddish-blonde curls were pulled up with elegant whimsy and lots of bobby pins, revealing dangling diamond earrings that matched the elaborate necklace at her throat. There were faint lines around her eyes and mouth. She smelled a little like Stefan, so I had to assume she was a vampire, but the lines on her face surprised me. Stefan looked scarcely 20, and I'd somehow assumed that the undead were like the werewolves, whose cells repaired themselves and removed damage of age, disease, and experience. The woman padded into the room and made a beeline for Samuel, who turned to regard her gravely. When she leaned against him and stood on tiptoe to lightly lick his neck, he slid a hand up around to the base of her skull and looked at Stefan. I shifted a little farther toward the edge of my seat and twisted so I could watch them over the back of the love seat. I wasn't too worried about Samuel. He was poised to break her neck. Maybe a human couldn't have managed it, but he wasn't human.
"Lily, my lily fair," Stefan sighed, his voice puncturing the tension in the room. "Don't lick the guests, darling. Bad manners."
She paused, her nose resting against Samuel. I gripped the hilt of Z's dagger and hoped I didn't have to use it. Samuel could protect himself, I hoped, but he didn't like hurting women, and Stefan's lily looked very feminine.
"She said we had guests for entertainment."
Lily sounded like a petulant child who knows the promised trip to the toy store is about to be delayed.
"I'm sure she meant we had guests for you to entertain, my sweet."
Stefan hadn't moved from his chair, but his shoulders were tight and his weight was forward.
"But he smells so good," she murmured.
I thought she darted her head forward, but I must have been mistaken because Samuel didn't move.
"He's so warm."
"He's a werewolf, darling Lily. You'd find him a difficult meal."
Stefan got up and walked slowly around my couch. Taking one of Lily's hands in his, he kissed it.
"Come, entertain us, my lady."
He pulled her gently off Samuel and escorted her formally to an upright piano tucked into one corner of the room. He pulled out the bench and helped her settle.
"What should I play?" she asked. "I don't want to play Mozart. He was so rude."
Stefan touched her cheek with the tips of his fingers.
"By all means, play whatever you wish, and we will listen."
She sighed, an exaggerated sound with an accompanying shoulder droop. Then, like a marionette, she straightened from head to toe and placed her hands just so on the keys. I don't like piano music. There was only one music teacher in Aspen Creek when I grew up, and she played piano. For 4 years, I banged out tunes for a half hour a day and hated the piano more each year. It hated me back. It took only a few measures for me to realize I'd been wrong about the piano, at least when Lily played it. It didn't seem possible that all that sound came from the little upright piano and the fragile woman sitting before us.
"List," whispered Samuel, stepping away from the window and sitting on the back of my seat.
Then he closed his eyes and listened, just as he'd listened to the moon. Stefan stepped away from the piano once Lily was focused on her music. He drifted back to stand beside me. Then he held out a hand. I glanced at Samuel, but he was still lost in the music. I took Stefan's hand and let him pull me to my feet. He took me to the far side of the room before releasing me.
"It isn't being a vampire that made her this way," he said, not whispering exactly, but in low tones that didn't carry over the music. "Her maker found her playing piano at an expensive brothel. He decided he wanted her in his seed, so he took her before he understood that she was touched. In the normal course, she would have been mercifully killed. It is dangerous to have a vampire who cannot control herself. I know the werewolves do the same. But no one could bear to lose her music, so she is kept in the seed and guarded like the treasure she is."
He paused.
"But usually she is not allowed to wander about at the will. There are always attendants who are assigned to keep her and our guests safe. Perhaps our mistress amuses herself."
I watched Lily's delicate hands flash across the keys and produce music of power and intellect that she didn't possess herself. I thought about what had happened when Lily had come into the room. "If Samuel had reacted badly?" I asked.
"She'd have no chance against him."
Stefan rocked back on his heels unhappily.
"She has no experience at taking unwilling prey, and Samuel is old. Lily is precious to us. If he had hurt her, the whole seed would have demanded retribution."
"Shh," said Samuel.
She played Liszt for a long time. Not the early lyrical pieces, but the ones he composed after hearing the radical violinist, Paganini. But right in the middle of one of his distinctively mad runs of notes, she switched into a blues piece I didn't recognize, something soft and relaxed that lazed in the room like a big cat. She played a little Beatles, some Chopin, and something vaguely oriental in style, before falling into the familiar strains of Ina Kleina Nacht music.
"I thought you weren't going to play Mozart," said Stefan when she'd finished the song and begun picking out a melody with her right hand.
"I like his music," she explained to the keyboard, "but he was a pig."
She crashed her hands on the keys twice.
"But he is dead, and I am not dead."
I wasn't going to argue with her. Not when one of those delicate fingers broke the key beneath it. No one else said anything either. She got up from the piano abruptly and strode through the room. She hesitated in front of Samuel, but when Stefan cleared his throat, she trotted up to him and kissed him on the chin.
"I'm going to eat now," she said. "I'm hungry."
"Fine."
Stefan hugged her, then directed her out of the room with a gentle push. She hadn't once so much as looked at me.
"So you think we're being set up?"
asked Samuel, with lazy geniality that seemed somehow out of place. Stefan shrugged.
"You, I, or a Lily, take your pick."
"It seems like a lot of trouble to go to," I ventured. "If Samuel died, Bran would tear this place apart. There wouldn't be a vampire left in the state." I looked at Stefan. "Your lady may be powerful, but numbers matter. The Tri-Cities isn't that big. If there were hundreds of you here, I'd have noticed it. Bran can call upon every alpha in North America."
"It is nice to know how we are esteemed by the wolves. I'll make certain our mistress knows to leave the wolf alone, because she should fear them," said a woman from just behind me.
I jumped forward and turned, and Stefan was suddenly between me and the new vampire. This one was neither ethereal nor seductive. If she hadn't been a vampire, I'd have put her age somewhere around 60, every year etched in the lines of grim disapproval that traversed her face.
"Estelle," said Stefan.
I couldn't tell if it was a greeting, introduction, or admonition.
She has changed her mind. She doesn't want to come up to visit with the wolf. They can come to her instead.
Estelle didn't seem to react to Stefan at all.
They are under my protection.
Stefan's voice darkened in a way I'd never heard it before.
She said you may come too if you wish.
She looked at Samuel.
I'll need to take any crosses or holy objects you are wearing, please. We do not allow people to go armed in the presence of our mistress.
She held out a gold embossed leather bag, and Samuel unhooked his necklace. When he pulled it out of his shirt, the necklace didn't blaze or glow. It was just a bit of ordinary metal. But I saw her involuntary shudder when it brushed close to her skin. She looked at me, and I pulled out my necklace and showed her my sheep.
No crosses, I said in a bland voice. I didn't expect to be out speaking to your mistress tonight.
She didn't even glance at Z's dagger, dismissing it as a weapon. After pulling the drawstring tight, she let the bag dangle from it.
Come with me.
I'll bring them down in a minute, Stefan said. Go tell her we are coming.
The other vampire raised her eyebrows, but left without a word, carrying the bag with Samuel's cross in it.
There's something more happening than I thought, Stefan said rapidly. Against most of those here, I can protect you, but not the mistress herself. If you'd like, I'll get you out of here and see if I can find the information without you.
No, said Samuel. We're here now. Let us finish this.
Samuel's words slurred a little, and I saw Stefan give him a sharp glance.
Once more, I offer you escort away from here.
This time Stefan looked at me.
I would have no harm come to you and yours here.
Can you find out where the other wolves are if she doesn't want you to? I asked him. He hesitated, which was answer enough.
We'll go talk to her then, I said.
Stefan nodded, but not like he was happy about it.
Then I find myself echoing your gremlin. Keep your eyes away from hers. She'll probably have others with her, whether she allows you to see them or not. Don't look at anyone's eyes. There are four or five here who could entangle even your wolf.
He turned and led the way through the house to an alcove sheltering a wrought iron spiral staircase. As we started down, I thought we were going to the basement, but the stairway went deeper. Small lights on the cement wall surrounding the stairs turned on as Stefan passed them. They allowed us to see the stairs, and that we were traveling down a cement tube, but they weren't bright enough to do much more. Fresh air wafted out of small vents that kept the air moving, but it also kept me from smelling anything from deeper down.
How far down are we going?
I asked, trying to fight off the claustrophobic desire to run back the way we'd come.
About 20 feet from the surface.
Stefan's voice echoed a little, or else something below us made a noise. Maybe I was just jumpy. Eventually, the stairway ended in a pad of cement. But even with my night vision, the darkness was so absolute I could see only a few yards in any direction. The smell of bleach danced around several scents I'd never encountered before. Stefan moved, and a series of fluorescent lights flickered to life. We stood in an empty room with cement floors, walls, and ceilings. The overall effect was sterile and empty. Stefan didn't pause, just continued through the room and into a narrow tunnel that sloped gently upward as we walked. Steel doors without knobs or handles lined the tunnel at even intervals. I could hear things moving behind the doors, and scooted up until I could touch Samuel's shoulder for reassurance. As I passed the last door, something slammed against it, ringing with a hollow boom that echoed away from us. Behind another door, someone, or something, began a high-pitched, hopeless cascade of laughter that ended in a series of screams. By the end of it, I was all but crawling up on top of Samuel. But he was still relaxed, and his breathing and pulse hadn't even begun to speed up. Damn him. I didn't take a deep breath until we'd left the doors behind. The tunnel took a narrow turn, and the floor became a steep upward set of 12 stairs that ended in a room with curved, plastered walls, wooden floors, and soft lighting. Directly opposite the stairway was a sumptuous mocha leather couch whose curves echoed the walls. A woman reclined on 2 overstuffed, tapestry-covered pillows braced against one of the couch's arms. She wore silk.
I could smell the residue of the silkworms, just as I could smell the faint scent I was learning to identify with vampire. The dress itself was simple and expensive, revealing her figure in swirling colors ranging from purple to red. Her narrow feet were bare, except for red and purple toenail polish. She had them braced, so her knees came up and provided backing to support the paperback she was reading. She finished the page, dog-eared one corner, and set it carelessly on the floor. She swung her legs off the couch and shifted so that her face was toward us before she raised her gaze to look at us. It was so gracefully done that I barely had time to drop my own eyes.
"Introduce us, Stefano," she said, her voice a deep contralto made the richer by a touch of an Italian accent.
Stefan bowed, a formal gesture that should have looked odd with his torn jeans, but somehow came out gracefully old-fashioned instead.
"Signora Marsilia," he said, "may I introduce you to Mercedes Thompson, auto-mechanic extraordinaire, and her friend Dr. Samuel Kornick, who is the Maroc's son. Mercy, Dr. Kornick, this is Signora Marsilia, mistress of the Mid-Columbia Seed."
"Welcome," she said. It had been bothering me how human the two women upstairs had seemed with their wrinkles and imperfections. Stefan himself had a touch of otherness that I could see. I had known him for inhuman the first time I'd seen him, but, except for the distinctive scent of vampire, the other two women would have passed for human. This one would not have. I stared at her, trying to nail down what was making the hair on the back of my neck rise. She looked like a woman in her early 20s, evidently having died and become vampire before life had marked her. Her hair was blonde, which was not a color I associated with Italy. Her eyes were dark, though, as dark as my own. Hastily, I jerked my gaze from her face, my breath coming more rapidly, as I realized how easy it was to forget. She hadn't been looking at me, though. Like the other vampires, her attention was on Samuel, and understandably so. He was the son of the Maroc, Brand's son, a person of influence rather than a VW mechanic. Then, too, most women would look at him rather than me.
"I have said something to amuse you, Mercedes?" Marsilia asked.
Her voice was pleasant, but there was power behind it, something akin to the power the Alphas could call upon. I decided to tell her the truth and see what she made of it. "You are the third woman tonight who has virtually ignored me, Signora Marsilia. However, I find it perfectly understandable, since I have trouble taking my attention off Dr. Kornick, too."
"Do you often have such an effect on women, Dr. Kornick?"
she asked him archly. See, her attention was still really on him. Samuel, unflappable Samuel, stuttered.
"I haven't..."
He stopped and sucked in air. Then, sounding a little more like himself, he said,
"I expect that you have more luck with the opposite sex than I do."
She laughed, and I realized finally what it was that bothered me. There was something off about her expressions and her gestures, as if she were only aping humans, as if, without us here to perform for, she would not appear human at all. Z told me that modern advances in CGI allowed filmmakers to create computer-animated people who seemed very nearly human. But they found that after a certain point, the closer the characters looked to real, the more they repelled their audience. I knew now exactly what he meant. She had everything almost right. Her heartbeat, she breathed regularly. Her skin was flushed slightly, like a person who has just finished walking in the cold. But her smiles were just slightly wrong, coming too late or too early. Her imitation of a human was very close, but not quite close enough to be real, and that small difference was giving me the creeps. Generally, I don't have the control problems that the werewolves do. Coyotes are adaptable, amiable beasts. But at that moment, if I had been in coyote form, I'd have been running away as fast as I could.
"My Stefano tells me that you want to know about the visitors who paid me so nicely to leave them alone."
She had gone back to ignoring me again, something I wasn't really unhappy with.
"Yes,"
Samuel kept his voice soft, almost dreamy.
We will eventually find them ourselves, but your information would help. After I give you this information,
her voice rumbled in her throat like a cat's,
we shall talk a little about the Maroc and what he will give me for cooperation.
Samuel shook his head.
I am sorry, Signora. I do not have authority to discuss this matter. I will be happy to forward any messages you might have to my father.
She pouted at him, and I felt the impact of her intent upon him, could smell the beginnings of his arousal. The scary things making noise behind steel doors hadn't caused his pulse to increase, but the mistress of the sea could. She leaned forward, and he closed the distance between them until her face was only inches from his groin.
Samuel, said Stefan quietly, there is blood on your neck. Did Lily cut you? Let me see it, suggested the Signora.
She breathed in deeply, then made a hungry noise that sounded like the rattle of old dry bones.
I will take care of it for you.
That sounded like a really bad idea somehow. I wasn't the only one who thought so.
They are under my protection, mistress, Stefan said, his voice stiffly formal. I brought them here so you could speak to the Maroc's son. Their safety is my honor, and it was almost lost earlier when Lily came to us unescorted. I should hate to think your wishes were opposed to my honor.
She shut her eyes and dropped her head, resting her forehead on Samuel's belly. I heard her take in another deep breath, and Samuel's arousal grew, as if she called it from him as she inhaled.
It has been so long, she whispered. His power calls to me like brandy on a winter night. It is difficult to think. Who was in charge of Lily when she wandered in to my guests? I will find out, Stefan said. It would be my pleasure to bring the miscreants before you and see you once more attend your people, mistress.
She nodded, and Samuel groaned. The sound made her open her eyes, and they were no longer dark. In the dimly lit room, her eyes gleamed red and gold fire.
My control is not as good as it once was, she murmured.
Somehow I'd expected her voice to harshen with the heat of the flames in her eyes, but instead her voice softened and deepened seductively until my own body was reacting, and I don't care for other women that way as a rule.
This would be a good time for your sheep, Mercy.
Stefan's attention was so focused upon the other vampire, it took me a moment to realize he was speaking to me. I'd been edging closer to Samuel. 5 years of study in the martial arts had given me a purple belt, the muscles to heft car parts around almost as well as a man, and the understanding that my paltry skills weren't worth a damn thing against a vampire. I debated the wisdom of knocking Samuel away from her, but something my senses had been trying to tell me for a while had finally kicked in. There were others here, other vampires I couldn't see or hear, only scent. Stefan's advice gave me something better to do. I pulled out my necklace. The chain was long enough that I could tug it over my head, and I let it dangle from my hand just as Marsilia moved. I grew up with werewolves who ran faster than greyhounds, and I am a little faster yet. But I never saw Marsilia move. One moment, she was pressed against the front of Samuel's jeans, and the next, her legs were wrapped around his waist and her mouth was on his neck. Everything that followed seemed to happen slowly, although I suppose it was only a few seconds. The illusion, hiding the other vampires, dissipated in the frenzy of Marsilia's feeding, and I saw them, 6 vampires lined up against the wall of the room. They were making no attempt to appear human, and I gathered a hurried impression of gray skin, hollow cheeks, and eyes glittering like backlit gemstones. None of them moved, though Stefan had wrapped himself around Marsilia and was trying to pull her off. Nor did they interfere when I closed the distance between Samuel and me, the silly necklace wrapped around my wrist. I suppose they didn't consider either of us a threat. Samuel's eyes were closed, his head thrown back to give Marsilia better access. So scared I could barely breathe, I pressed the silver lamb against Marsilia's forehead, and said a hurried but fervent prayer that the lamb would work the same way a cross did. The little figure pressed into her forehead, but Marsilia, as absorbed in the feeding as Samuel, paid me no mind. Then several things happened almost at the same time. Only afterward did I put them in their probable order. The sheep under my hand blazed up with the eerie blue flame of a well-adjusted Bunsen burner. Marsilia was suddenly crouched on the back of the couch, as far from my necklace and Samuel as she could get. She shrieked, a high-pitched noise just barely within the range of my hearing, and made a gesture with her hands. Everyone dropped to the floor, Samuel, Stefan, and Marsilia's guards, leaving me standing, my little sheep aglow like an absurdly small blue neon sign facing the mistress of the nest. I thought at first that the others had fallen voluntarily, reacting to some secret sign I hadn't seen. But Marsilia jerked her chin, a quick, inhuman motion, and screamed again. The bodies on the floor twisted a little, as if something hurt, but they could not move to alleviate it. And I finally realized that it was magic as well as fear that was stealing my breath. Marsilia was doing something to hurt them all. "Stop it," I said with all the authority I could muster. My voice came out thin and shaky, not impressive. I cleared my throat and tried again. Surely if I could face down Bran after the time I ran his Porsche into a tree without either a driver's license or permission to drive it, I could steady my voice so it didn't squeak. "Enough! No one has harmed you." "No harm," she hissed, tossing her head so her mane of hair fell away from her forehead to reveal a nasty-looking burn vaguely in the shape of my necklace. "You were feeding upon Samuel without his permission," I said firmly, as if I knew that her action had given me the right to defend him. I wasn't certain it was true, but bluffing worked with the wolves, and vampires seemed to be big on manners. She raised her chin, but didn't reply. She took a deep breath, and I realized she hadn't been breathing since I'd driven her off Samuel. Her eyelids fluttered as she took in the smell of the room. I could smell it, too. Fear, pain, blood, and something sweet and compelling brushed with the sense of those present.
"It has been a long time since I had such presented for me," she said. "He was bleeding and half caught already."
Her tone wasn't apologetic, but I'd settle for mere explanations if it only got us all out of here alive. Stefan managed to get out a single word.
"Trap."
She drew a quick circle in the air and dropped her hand out and away. In response, all the men on the floor went limp. Samuel, I noticed with relief, was still breathing.
"Explain, Stefan," she said,
and I took a deep, relieved breath at having her attention somewhere else.
"A trap for you, mistress," Stefan said,
his voice hoarse, like a man who has been screaming.
"Bleed the wolf and present him to you as if he were gift-wrapped. They were good. I didn't notice that he was under thrall until I saw the blood." "You may be right," she said. She gave me an irritated look. "Put that thing away, please. You don't need it now."
"It's all right, Mercy,"
said Stefan, his voice still whisper thin. He hadn't raised himself off the floor, but lay with his eyes closed, as if he'd come to the end of his strength. I hid the necklace again, and the room looked even dimmer in the remaining, more mundane lighting.
"Tell me about this trap, Stefano," she said briskly as she climbed from the back of the couch and into her seat.
If her eyes dwelled a moment too long upon Samuel, who was still limp, at least their inhuman flames had died to flickers. The vampires were all showing signs of life, but only Stefan was moving. He groaned as he sat up and rubbed his forehead as if it hurt. His movements were jerky, inhuman.
"Lily was sent to us without her attendant. I thought she was sent to create an incident. If Samuel had killed her, it would be war between our seed and the Maroc. But perhaps it was more than that. I thought we got him away before she marked him, but looking back, I believe he was enthralled from that moment on. They sent him down here bleeding like a rare steak, and presented him to you. If you had killed Samuel, and I think it likely half-starved as you've been keeping yourself,
I could hear the disapproval in his voice.
If you had killed Samuel,
he let his words trail off. She licked her lips as if there was still a trace of blood left. I saw a flash of regret on her face as she stared at Samuel, as if she wished no one had stopped her.
If I had killed him, there would have been a war.
She looked away from Samuel and met my eyes, but nothing happened. She frowned at me, but seemed less surprised than I was. But maybe the little sheep who must have protected me from her magic was still at work. She tapped her long manicured nails together, looking as if she were considering something.
We would be badly outnumbered, Stefan said when she said no more.
He gathered himself visibly before getting to his feet.
If a war broke out, we would be forced to leave this country.
She stilled, as if his words were of great significance.
To leave this accursed desert and return home,
she closed her eyes.
Now that is a prize that many here might risk my wrath to gain.
The other vampires were stirring by then. I moved between them and Samuel, trusting Stefan to keep his mistress off us. As they rose, they seemed to be more focused on Samuel than on Marsilia. Like most everyone else tonight, they ignored me as they slowly began closing in. "Wake up, Sam," I nudged him with the heel of my foot. Stefan said something in liquid tones with the unmistakable cadence of Italian. Like they were in a peculiar game of swing the statue, the other vampires simply stopped moving, though it left some of them in awkward poses. "What's wrong with Samuel?" I asked the question of Stefan, but it was Marsilia who answered.
"He is bespelled by my bite," she said. "Some do die of the kiss, but it will probably do no permanent harm to a werewolf. If I were less, then he would not have succumbed."
She sounded pleased.
"Then how did Lily manage?" asked Stefan. "It wasn't a full kiss, but he was in thrall."
She crouched by my feet and touched Samuel's neck. I didn't like the way she just kept appearing places, especially when she did it near Samuel, who couldn't defend himself.
"That is a good question," she murmured. "He is a dominant, this son of Bran."
"Yes," I answered. I knew that humans had trouble telling a dominant from a submissive wolf. I hadn't thought the same would be true of a vampire.
"Then Lily could not enthrall him, but perhaps she could have been loaned the power."
She brought her fingers to her lips and licked Samuel's blood off them. Her eyes were glowing again. I reached into my shirt and started to draw out the sheep, but a pale hand wrapped around my wrist and jerked me against a body all cold bone and sinew. By the time I realized I'd been grabbed, I'd already thrown him. If I'd had time to think, I'd never have tried to throw a vampire the way I would a human, but it was a reflexive thing born of hundreds of hours in the dojo. He landed right on top of Samuel, because Marsilia had gotten out of the way. The creature twisted, and I thought he was coming at me again, but he was after Samuel instead. He struck at Samuel's bleeding neck. Marsilia jerked her vampire off, leaving torn skin where his fangs had already locked onto flesh. Without visible effort or emotion, she tossed him into the nearest wall. Plaster flew, but he bounced to his feet with a snarl that died as soon as he saw who had thrown him the second time.
"Out, my dears."
I noticed that the burn mark on her forehead was healing.
"Out before we lose all honor, overcome by such sweetness as is laid out here before us, like a tempting feast."
I gotten my sheep out, finally, but before it started glowing, we were alone. Stefan, Samuel, and I. Chapter 11.
There was an elevator hidden behind one of the doors in the corridor. Stefan leaned wearily against the wall. He carried Samuel, who was bloodstained, limp, but still breathing. "You're sure he's all right?" I asked, not for the first time.
"He'll not die of it," he said, which was not quite the same thing.
The elevator came to a smooth stop, and the doors slid open to reveal a kitchen. Bright lights gleamed on bird's-eye maple cabinetry and creamy stone countertops. There were no windows, but a clever use of mirrors and backlit stained glass panels made up for the lack. Next to the refrigerator was something I was a lot more interested in, an outside door. I didn't wait for Stefan, but opened the door and ran out to the manicured lawn. As I sucked in a shaky breath of air that smelled of dust and exhaust rather than vampires, I realized that I'd come out of the main house. "The houses are connected by the tunnels," I said as Stefan came down the back steps.
"There's no time to talk," grunted Stefan.
I looked at him and saw that he was struggling with Samuel's weight. "I thought vampires were strong enough to upend trees," I said.
"Not after Marsilia gets finished with them," said Stefan.
He shifted Samuel, trying to get a better grip. "Why not a fireman's carry?" I asked.
"Because I don't want to be carrying him that way when he starts waking up. He's not going to be a happy wolf. This way, I can put him down and get out of the way if I need to."
"I'll carry him," said a stranger's voice.
Stefan turned with a snarl, and for the first time ever I saw his fangs, white and sharp in the night. Another vampire stood near us, wearing jeans and one of those white piratey shirts open to the waist that you see at Renaissance fairs and Errol Flynn movies. It didn't look good on him. His shoulders were too narrow, and his flat stomach just looked cadaverous rather than sexy. Or maybe I just had enough of vampires that night.
"Peace, Stefan."
The vampire held up a hand.
"Marsilia thought you could use some help."
"You mean she didn't want Dr. Kornick to be here when he came out of the kiss's hold?"
Stefan relaxed a little.
"All right."
They transferred Samuel from one vampire to the other. The newcomer apparently wasn't suffering from Stefan's worries, because he lifted the werewolf over his shoulder. The night was quiet, but there was a waiting quality to it that I recognized from the hunt. Someone was watching us. Big surprise. None of us talked as we made our way through the garden and out the main gates, which someone had propped open while we had been inside. I slid the door of the van open and pointed to the long bench seat. The pirate-clad vampire pulled Samuel off his shoulder and put him on the far back seat. I decided that much strength was creepier in vampires than it was in werewolves. At least the wolves looked like people who should be strong. With Samuel safely stowed, the vampire turned directly to me.
"Mercedes Thompson," he said. "My mistress thanks you for your visit, which has allowed us to discover problems that otherwise might have gone unnoticed. She also thanks you for allowing her to keep her honor and that of her vassal, Stefano Uccello."
He saw the skepticism on my face and smiled.
"She said that she'd never been repulsed by a sheep before. Crosses, scriptures, and holy water, but not a sheep."
"The Lamb of God," explained Stefan.
He was looking almost like his usual self, with one elbow propped against the door of the van.
"I didn't think it would work either. Otherwise, of course, I would have told her to give it to Estelle."
"Of course,"
the other vampire gave me another quick, charming smile.
"In any case, I am to extend Signora Marsilia's apologies for any discomfort you or yours experienced this night, and we hope that you will extend our apologies also to Dr. Kornick. Please explain that the mistress intended him no hurt, but that her recent indisposition has allowed some of her people to become obstreperous. They will be punished."
"Tell the Signora that I find her apologies gracious, and that I, too, regret any trouble she suffered this night," I lied. But I must have done it well, because Stefan gave me a half-nod of approval. The vampire bowed, then, holding it gingerly by its chain, handed me Samuel's cross and a small sheet of paper, the thick, handmade kind. It smelled of the same herbs that scented the house, and upon it, written in a flourishing hand that had learned to write with a quill, was a Kennewick address.
She had intended to give this to you herself, but has asked me to tell you more. The wolves paid us just under $10,000 for the rights to live at this address for 2 months.
Stefan straightened.
That's too much. Why did she charge them so much?
She didn't. They paid us without any negotiation. I expressed my concerns about the oddity of the transaction to the signora, but...
He glanced at Stefan and shrugged.
Marsilia has not been herself since she was exiled here from Milan, Stefan told me.
He looked at the other vampire and said,
It is a good thing that happened tonight. To see our mistress potent with her hunger again is wondrous, Andre.
Wondrous was not the word I'd have chosen.
I hope so, said the other harshly. But she has been asleep for 2 centuries. Who knows what will happen when the mistress awakens? You may have outsmarted yourself this time.
It was not I, murmured Stefan. Someone was trying to stir up trouble again. Our mistress has said I might investigate.
The two vampires stared at each other, neither of them breathing. At last, Stefan said,
Whatever their purpose, they have succeeded in awakening her at the last. If they had not put my guests in danger, I would not willingly hunt them.
Vampire politics, I thought. Humans, werewolves, or, apparently, vampires, it doesn't matter. Get more than 3 of them together, and the jockeying for power begins. I understood some of it. The older wolves pull away from the world as it changes, until some of them live like hermits in their caves, only coming out to feed, and eventually even losing interest in that. It sounded as if Marsilia suffered from the same malady. Evidently, some of the vampires were happy with their mistress's neglect, while Stefan was not. Andre sounded as if he didn't know which side he was on. I was on whichever side meant that they left me alone.
The mistress told me to give you something, too, Andre told Stefan.
There was a sound, like the crack of a bullet, and Stefan staggered back against the van, one hand over his face. It wasn't until the faint blush of a handprint appeared on Stefan's cheek that I realized what had happened.
A foretaste, Andre told him. Today she is busy, but tomorrow you will report to her at dusk. You should have told her what Mercedes Thompson was when you first knew. You should have warned the mistress, not let her find out when the walker stood against her magic. You should not have brought her here.
She brought no steak or holy water.
Stefan's voice gave no indication that the blow bothered him.
She is no danger to us. She barely understands what she is, and there is no one to teach her. She does not hunt vampires, nor attack those who leave her in peace.
Andre jerked his head around faster than anyone should and looked at me.
Is that true, Mercedes Thompson? You do not hunt those who merely frighten you?
I was tired, worried about Samuel, and somewhat surprised to have survived my encounter with Signora Marsilia and her people. I don't hunt anything except the occasional rabbit, mouse, or pheasant, I said. Until this week, that was it for me. If I hadn't been so tired, I'd never have uttered that last sentence.
What about this week?
It was Stefan who asked. I killed 2 werewolves.
You killed 2 werewolves?
Andre gave me a look that was hardly flattering.
I suppose you were defending yourself and just happened to have a gun at hand?
I shook my head. One of them was moonstruck. He'd have killed anyone near him. I tore his throat out and he bled to death. The other one I shot before he could kill the Alpha.
Tore his throat out, murmured Stefan,
while Andre clearly didn't know whether to believe me or not. I was Coyote, and trying to get his attention so that he'd chase me. Stefan frowned at me.
Werewolves are fast.
I know that, I said irritably. I'm faster. I thought about the wild chase with Bran's mate, and added, most of the time anyway. I didn't intend to kill... Someone screamed, and I quit talking. We waited, but there were no more sounds.
I had better attend the signora, said Andre,
and was gone. Just gone.
I'll drive, Stefan told me.
You'll need to ride in the back with Dr. Kornick so he has someone he trusts with him when he wakes up.
I gave him the keys and hopped in the back. "What's going to happen when he wakes up?" I asked as I settled onto the back seat, lifting Samuel's head so I could scoot underneath it and sit down. My hand smoothed over his hair and slid over his neck. The marks of the vampires were already scabbed over, rough under my light touch.
"Maybe nothing will happen," Stefan said, getting in the driver's seat and starting the van. "But sometimes they don't react well to being kissed. Signora Marsilia used to prefer wolves to more mundane prey. That's why she lost her place in Italy and was sent here."
"Feeding off of werewolves is taboo?" I asked.
"No."
He turned the van around and started back up the drive.
"Feeding off the werewolf mistress of the Lord of Night is taboo."
He said Lord of Night as if I should know who that was, so I asked, "Who is the Lord of Night?"
"The Master of Milan, or he was last we heard."
"When was that?"
200 years, more or less. He exiled Signora Marsilia here with those who owed her life or vassalage.
"There wasn't anything here 200 years ago," I said.
"I was told he stuck a pin in a map." "You are right. There was nothing here. Nothing but desert, dust, and Indians."
He adjusted the rearview mirror so he could see me, and his eyes met mine as he continued.
"Indians? And something we'd never encountered before, Mercy. Shapeshifters, who were not moon-called. Men and women who could take on the coyote's form as they chose. They were